Kids in museums, as they stared open-mouthed at the big skeletons rising above them, he wondered what their fascination really represented. He finally decided that children liked dinosaurs because these giant creatures personified the uncontrollable force of looming authority. They were symbolic parents, fascinating and frightening like parents. And kids loved them, as they loved their parents. Grant also suspected that that was why even young children learned the names of dinosaurs. It never failed to amaze him when a 3-year-old shrieked, "Stegosaurus!" Saying these complicated names was a way of exerting power over the giants, a way of being in control. "What do you know about Velociraptor?" Grant asked him. He was just making conversation. "It's a small carnivore that hunted in packs, like Deinonychus," Tim said. "That's right," Grant said, "although Deinonychus is now considered one of the Velociraptors, and the evidence for pack hunting is all circumstantial. It derives in part from the appearance of the animals, which are quick and strong, but small for dinosaurs, just 150 to 300 pounds each. We assume they hunted in groups if they were to bring down larger prey, and there are some fossil finds in which a single large prey animal is associated with several raptor skeletons, suggesting they hunted in packs. And, of course, raptors were large-brained, more intelligent than most dinosaurs."
"How intelligent is that?" Malcolm asked.
"Depends on who you talk to," Grant said. "Just as paleontologists have come around to the idea that dinosaurs were probably warm-blooded, a lot of us are starting to think some of them might have been quite intelligent, too, but nobody knows for sure." They left the visitor area behind, and soon they heard the loud hum of generators, smelled the faint odor of gasoline. They passed a grove of palm trees and saw a large, low concrete shed with a steel roof. The noise seemed to come from there. They looked in the shed.
"It must be a generator," Ellie said.
"It's big," Grant said, peering inside. The power plant actually extended 2 stories below ground level, a vast complex of whining turbines and piping that ran down in the earth, lit by harsh electric bulbs. "They can't need all this just for a resort," Malcolm said. "They're generating enough power here for a small city."
"Maybe for the computers?"
"Maybe." Grant heard bleating and walked north a few yards. He came to an animal enclosure with goats. By a quick count, he estimated there were 50 or 60 goats.
"What's that for?" Ellie asked.
"Beats me."
"Probably they feed them to the dinosaurs," Malcolm said.
The group walked on, following a dirt path through a dense bamboo grove. At the far side, they came to a double-layer chain-link fence 12 feet high, with spirals of barbed wire at the top. There was an electric hum along the outer fence. Beyond the fences, Grant saw dense clusters of large ferns, 5 feet high. He heard a snorting sound, a kind of snuffling. Then the sound of crunching footsteps coming closer. Then a long silence.
"I don't see anything," Tim whispered finally.
"Shh!" Grant waited. Several seconds passed. Flies buzzed in the air. He still saw nothing. Ellie tapped him on the shoulder and pointed. Amid the ferns, Grant saw the head of an animal. It was motionless, partially hidden in the fronds, the 2 large dark eyes watching them coldly. The head was 2 feet long. From a pointed snout, a long row of teeth ran back to the hole of the auditory meatus, which served as an ear. The head reminded him of a large lizard, or perhaps a crocodile. The eyes did not